Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
I actually think body image is right up there in these categories because if it's not treated early, the cycle ultimately repeats itself and you can carry that, you know, through your entire life and through other generations.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the My Body, My Story project. And today with us in the studio, Ursula. And while she's sitting in the makeup chair, Nicole is creating her magic and doing makeup and hair. And I'll be chatting with Ursula and asking her questions. And let's start. And tell us 10 facts about yourself.
Hi, Alex. It's lovely, firstly, to have me here. I feel like I'm really going to have a great day with you. And I look forward to continuing to watch and see what other women come through this journey. So 10 facts about myself. I'm 48 years old, born in Canberra in our nation's capital. I've lived there all of my life apart from living on the Sunshine Coast for a few years, but I did come back to Canberra. Mm-hmm. I'm the founder and managing director of a boutique executive support firm called Capital EA. It primarily upholds senior executives and their assistants. We work all across Australia. My favourite colour changes at the moment, but I'm loving a really bright orange. Mm-hmm. My favourite food is Mediterranean and Japanese. I've only ever read one entire book cover to cover, and that book was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, that's an interesting fact.
I know, it's the only book I've ever read cover to cover. I have a 24-year-old daughter whose friends are also my children. I have also been blessed with a granddaughter. I've experienced marriage, love, loss, separation, and soulmate connections. Mm-hmm. And my passion aligns to what I do naturally, and that is uplifting people, acknowledging their space, and truly connecting to their spirit. For me, that's what I yearn, is meaningful and deep connections. Mm-hmm. I'm the youngest of six, born to an incredible lineage of strength, courage, compassion, and wisdom. And I suppose part of the reason why I've accepted the invitation to come here today is probably in big part is the courage side of things, which mm-hmm. does come from my, more so my mother's side and family history of living in a time of the of World War II and experiencing a lot of hardship, which is, I guess, part of my journey today is looking at my life in retrospect and seeing really what's carried me through my life's pathway and everything I've done from, you know, from young to now. Mm-hmm. And I can say that a big part of my DNA is because of their courage. And it's always the courage to do things, step out of the comfort zone, hence today, stepping out of, you know, taking risks, you know, with starting a business. It all comes back to having courage. So it is nice to be in this position today to know that I take my hat off to them to giving me the life I have today.
So I know you listed all these facts, but we spoke before, and I know there's more interesting stories behind those facts. I'll just go one by one first. You mentioned that you have your own business and the name of the business. So what exactly do you do? Like, what's the...
What I did was I started a business from replicating what I did in my everyday role. Mm-hmm. And it was in the role I've always, so for nearly over 30 years, I've looked after senior executives mm-hmm. in achieving their goals. And when I was doing that role, I recognised that there were certain aspects or arms of that role that really needed to be given attention, mm-hmm. and to have balance in the role, essentially. And they were that you needed to put on a mentor coaching hat, mm-hmm. so to always pay it forward and to coach others and teach others what you've learnt yourself. Mm-hmm. So hence in my business, I have a coaching arm and I have a training and education arm, mm-hmm. that always gives back to the community and industry that's given me a lot of life experience. And the other is help with finding the right people, finding a match, you know, finding the fit to be acceptable for people, because if you're going to be successful in a relationship, you need to really work on that match, that fit that works in terms of values and understanding each other's, you know, remit, where people want to go in life. That's something that's often too often overlooked, and I think that's a really important part of our role today, is to help people find the right people to work with, mm-hmm. them. And then there's a concierge service. So again, it's in the realm of looking after people who are really busy, mm-hmm. and we just take up all their personal private life stuff. And board secretariat, which is minute taking, essentially, doing, mm-hmm. all the minutes and bits and pieces. So I did that in my job and then I replicated it as a business.
Oh, wow.
And then that business took off 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now I've just managed to kind of step back a little bit from it, because my daughter and her very close friend and another like my own daughter, mm-hmm. works in my business, along with another 7 others that work kind of external to us to keep the wheels on the vehicle, so to speak.
Great. Yeah. So where people can find you?
So they can find us on all social media platforms. Mm-hmm. One, if it's looking online, so Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and then we're based in Canberra, but we work all across Australia. So, yeah.
Great. So you're available via the Zoom call or?
Yes. Yeah. Team, Zoom. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we connect with everyone any way that they can.
And I'll put the link in the description of your episode, or so people can find you if they're interested.
Thank you.
Excellent. So, also, you mentioned about your family story, which is very interesting, and you didn't tell us some facts about your grandfather and the bear, and, you know.
Yep.
So when you say that courage is your family history, what exactly do you mean? And if you can tell us a bit more about your family story, I found it very interesting.
Yeah. So The history is my mother's side is Russian-Ukrainian and my father's is Austrian. But Mum sort of merged into Germany because she had to flee Russia during the war. Mm-hmm. And they had to kind of pack up in the middle of the night. Her father had already been taken, away, which she can only assume was the gas chambers, mm-hmm. back then. So my grandfather was taken in the night, and she was 6 years old at the time. She had a younger brother and an older brother, so there was the three of them and my mum. They walked extensively into the northern part of Germany to get away from, you know, from being potentially killed. So one of the things that happened along that journey, though, was quite significant, that her younger brother froze to death on that trek. So they only had a little bag each, and when they met the guards along the way, my grandmother taught my mother how to speak German. So by the time they got there, they had apparently they boiled their passports in sauerkraut, and, you know, removed all the ink. And then when they got to the border, they all spoke German. And my grandmother had already spoken German because she was the chef at in the office of the KGB, which is just crazy to think about. When I think about all of these stories that I heard, I was like, what?
You know, that's crazy. Book is needed.
Yeah, a book is needed. And but they managed to get through the check-in point. And after that, they lived in Germany
Which year, what year was it?
Ah, look, this is the thing that's all muddled to me, and I have to get 50s, all the, it was early, 40s. It was 40s, in the World War II.
Yeah. Ah, it's World War II, yeah, yes, World War II, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then eventually they got settled again in Germany, and my grandmother was the stoic one in it all, losing her husband, and she eventually remarried a German man that apparently was really supportive and would do anything for her in life. And they eventually decided to come out to Australia. Mm-hmm. And that was with, my mum, her brother, Henya, and her new husband. Mm-hmm. And they decided to land in, well, they had to get the ship to Perth. And then from Perth they went to Sydney. Mm. And they settled in Fairfield. And on that ship over is where she met my dad. Yeah, an Austrian blonde-headed, blue-eyed, cute Austrian.
How old was she?
She was actually 7 years older than him. He was younger. So she was, she must have been like 26 or 20, and he was like 22 or 20. So quite young, but she was older, yeah. And then he was on his way over to the Snowy Mountain scheme to work, he'd heard all about Australia and working on that Snowy Mountain scheme, and was going to be his ticket mm-hmm. into Australia. Mm-hmm. But apparently once he got there and he started working there, he could just think about my mum. So he'd used to come and bang on the door in Fairfield quite a few times. And my grandmother tried to get rid of him. But
she didn't like him?
No, she I don't know, she just said to watch him. Mm. Yeah. Famous last words. Anyway, mum eventually, she said that he nags so much that she thought if she doesn't go on a date with him that he won't go away.
Yeah, so she gave up.
She gave up, yeah, and she went on a date with him. And then they ended up getting, married, and they continued to live in Sydney. They had their first four children in Sydney. Mm. And then the last two, which is me and my sister, I'm the youngest, we were born in Canberra. Mm-hmm. So there is quite a journey. The other point I was saying that was quite amazing and part of my history, and I suppose, is that my great-grandfather got taken by a black bear in the forest. Mm. When he was out hunting. I guess in those parts of the world, you're going to come across some very difficult days, particularly in that time of World War II as well. Yeah.
So that was the time right after war when they moved to Australia. So it was like a land of hope.
The land of hope with a suitcase, nothing but a suitcase. And that, I guess that resonates with me, you know, like how do people start mm-hmm. a whole new life with just a suitcase? And just the courage it takes to do something like that, but then also the hope to fulfill a life in developing yourself, mm-hmm. you know, making your own money. And out of the six children, there was three that actually did make their own money, then the other ones sort of decided to go back into doing other things. But two of us are now quite strongly connected to just making our own self-worth mm-hmm. and we don't rely on anyone. We're quite independent girls. So she had four girls, two boys. Mm-hmm. And out of the girls, I guess, yeah, you could say that we're all very independent. Mm-hmm. We each have a level of resilience in us to survive and thrive, and I think that comes from her definitely.
Yeah, I think it stays in blood of next generations. Yeah. You know, the stories of moving countries or being brave to start all over again, and it's like the spirit of adventure as well, and spirit of and strength, you know, and courage to do that, because being an immigrant myself and moving countries twice in my life, I know it's quite a hard decision, you know, and also starting business. And I think that if I didn't move countries, I've always wanted to have my own business, but it just helped me to realize that nothing is impossible, and it's okay to start. It's hard to start from zero. Like, imagine, like, to have a courage, you're working with companies, you, like, you have security of your salary, and, you know, everyone knows you, and then you have to leave it all and start your own business.
Yeah, yeah. It's more daunting than I think we realize, because when I talk to people, when people say to me, oh, how did you do that? Or I want to start my own business, or how, you know, what did you do? And I think, wow, I don't know. Like, I honestly just think I took the step. I just stepped off and thought, I've got no one, I've got no backup. If I'm going to survive, you know, I've got to make this happen. And I was also prepared to lose and go, you know what, if I don't try, how am I going to know whether I'm going to survive? Mm. So I'm going to have to try to give this a go. And, you know, you'll always find something in life to do. You know, like, I don't have any worries about making money, for instance, because I know that I will always be...
Find a way.
I will always find a way, you know, always. It's more that I want to be doing something that I'm passionate about and that I feel wholesome with doing, because there's a lot of time that's spent in our lives just living, right, existing. You want to make every part of your time to be
valuable.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
It's just listening to myself, you know, when you talk, I was like, exactly.
You're going to finish my sentences. I told you when I first said this was all divine intervention. I knew there was going to be something there that I was like, I'm going to have fun. And just, yeah.
So it's very interesting. I mean, amazing story, like in family story. So also I wanted to ask you about being a sixth child, like the last child in the family, number six.
Yeah.
So was it kind of they gave up on you, or you were the most loved one? Like, there are two options for younger kids.
If you ask my sisters and brother, they would say I was the most loved. And they still claim that, yeah, I got away with murder. But I was definitely planned, because there was one other daughter they had 2 years prior to me who wasn't as planned, and then they didn't want to leave her on her own.
Yeah.
So they wanted to put some other child there with her, so I
for
came
company.
Along. Yeah, for company. Fancy having a baby for company. But that's what they did. And, and you know what? I can honestly say that I feel that I was the most connected with them. I'm still the only one that's connected to one other sister, but not as much, with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
He left... we did lose one brother, tragically, and after that it kind of tore our family apart a little bit.
Mm.
We were a pretty close-knit family. We were all quite active. We did adventures together. You know, Dad taught us how to snow ski. He taught us how to water ski.
Wow.
We had a, you know, house down the south coast that we could all go to as a family. We always had somewhere to go. We all had our own skis, snow boots, you know, our own everything.
Mm.
Including with water skiing as well. You know, we were always quite adventurous as a big family. But after Robin died, it did kind of shift. The dynamic shifted.
Mm-hmm.
So that eventually incurred a marriage breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad left when I was 14 to go live in Thailand. So he's quite entrepreneurial as well. He's lived over there most of my life now, realistically. I did actually go over and visit him quite regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So my adventure started to kind of spawn from seeing the world a little bit when I was quite young. And when I think back then too, you know, at the first trip I did, I think I was 15 or...
Where did you go?
I went to Thailand unaccompanied, like at 15, and I had to find where he lived, which was quite obscure. He was right down in the south of Thailand on in a very remote area called Koh Lanta,
mm-hmm.
which is about a 30-minute ferry from Phi Phi Island and 2 hours from Krabi. Essentially, he ended up taking stock of a restaurant over a pier. And the ferry used to arrive at that pier, and then he'd have like this big sitting area and restaurant. And then during the day, he had a bakery, and he used to bring people from Switzerland to come and bake for him. So there was a Swiss bakehouse in the middle of this tiny island.
Oh my God, and who would buy that?
The tourists. There was a lot of tourists that used to dive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, divers.
Divers. And they used to have lots of people, including famous people, come there because it was just the most special, most magic place that I'd seen. I was lucky. I used to go there for trips of 4 and 5 weeks, and Dad used to just book a bungalow on the beach for me at the age of 14. And I would just spend like my Christmas holidays sitting in this bungalow on the beach in the most remote area of Thailand. It was magical. It was really magical.
But what's your favorite place in the world to visit?
Look, my favorite, and I have done extensive travel when I was younger, and there's a question about what age I would want to go back to, and it was at that age.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, you know, but it's Greece. I'm yet to see Turkey, but I've gone back to return to Greece, and there's just something special about Greece. I love the people. I feel like I fit in there, and that people are my sort of people.
Mm-hmm.
I love the food, being Mediterranean, and just all my favourite things.
Yeah.
I love the blue skies and the serenity of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, while you mention that, I'll ask you this question: that if you could go back to any age, what it would be, why, and what advice would you give yourself at that age?
So the age is 21,
mm-hmm.
and it was the time I actually decided to travel the world, and I took 12 months to do that, which was, looking back, you know, and at the time, it was sensational. It provided me a whole new opportunity of life, and to understand that, you know, you don't need to live in a box.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep looking outside the box in life. And that's what that trip did for me. When I came back, I was an entirely different person. And what the advice I would give myself back then is, the world, as you've witnessed, is wondrous. Don't settle for anything less.
Mm.
That's the advice I would have given myself. Yeah.
It's good advice. So moving to the aging theme of our podcast, I'd like to ask you, what does aging means to you?
Yes. So aging is, it's been transformative for me. When reflecting on particular stages of the process, I feel it's bittersweet, I guess. When you start your life, you lack the experience to fully understand aging.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, hindsight is a wonderful thing. But as you age, you have so much more clarity in a body that I feel is a little more fragile.
How come?
Why? Well,
fragile
perhaps in depending on how you've treated your body, you know. So if you've been, you know, exercising hard, maybe it's not so fragile. If you've succumbed childbirth or other health related issues through life, it just isn't what it was when you were younger.
Yeah.
Your legs hurt more, your hips are a little more sore. That kind of fragility.
So if your body could talk, what it would tell you or ask you at the moment?
It would say, stop putting pollutants into me, love and nurture me, and take more time to move. That's what it would say.
Good. So your body asks for healthy stuff for itself. So
it does, yeah.
What do you think are the main causes of our body image insecurities or issues?
I think the main causes for body image issues are being witnessed to an accumulative response from both a conscious and non-conscious way in which people live their lives. So for me, this began at childhood, from being raised in a fairly high level loaded personal vanity kind of arena, and which I think was a knock-on effect for instance, my mum. You know, she would have had that come down from her mother, wearing particular clothing, you know, skirts and shoes and hair. The hair was always...
A subject.
Oh, my gosh, the hair. But, yeah, that I think it's a knock-on effect, you know, so it just continues to go through and the cycle repeats itself, so to speak. So, like any family trauma, you know, that's travelled through generations, whether it be violence, addiction, abuse, I actually think body image is right up there in these categories, because if it's not treated early, the cycle ultimately repeats itself and you can carry that, you know, your entire life and through other generations. That's the way I see it.
I like your answer. I think it's the first time I hear such a different answer to this question. Nicole is nodding because she
listens to those answers.
Yeah, so it's interesting that I actually think exactly the same. And I think it's, people say social media, I think it's like trigger for all that stuff you mentioned.
Yeah, it comes from somewhere else
from
first.
Inside. Yeah. And it's just interesting that exactly that nowadays people are more educated about their traumas, you know, how it works. But old days, it was just transferred from one generation to another, the rules, as you said, how you have to dress, how you have...
Yes.
Like, I remember my grandmother, when I was a teenager, I came to visit her in different city, and I was wearing trousers. And she told me,
no way.
When you go outside with me, no trousers.
Mm.
You are the girl. I want you to wear a skirt.
Yes.
And I was shocked then. I was like, why? What's wrong with me wearing trousers?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. That
same
mentioned.
For me. Yeah. I always had to wear skirts.
Yeah.
Skirts and stockings.
Yeah.
And, you know, nice shoes, and my hair always had to be done. But yeah, it came from, you know, I don't blame her.
Good
it
girl
came,
rules.
Yeah, that's right. And that came from her mother and the way she was raised. So I actually do think there is something in that the same as a family trauma going through, you know, how they often say, oh, your father hit so and so because his father hit him.
Yeah.
And I think body image is right there up there with a trauma, a family trauma, like something that continues for generations, you know.
I also think that those rules were based on the position of men and women in the society. So you, by dressing yourself up and being a good girl, you're supposed to be competitive among other candidates for a good husband, you know?
Oh, yes, yes.
So, and nowadays, women are more independent. They don't need to look good to meet a good partner or to be happy. So that's why it's changing. So, but the old days, it was kind of a competition among other women. So you have to look your best. So you'll be chosen by a good man. You know?
That makes sense. That makes sense as well.
Yeah. So that's interesting. My observation, like all my analysis of that subject, which I was thinking a lot about, obviously, because we did this podcast, one of the reasons.
Yes.
And so I know the answer, but I want to go a bit deeper into this question. So what do you think are the effects of negative body image on a relationship? And I'm talking about not just a partner relationship, but any relationship with friends, co-workers, whatever. So what are the...
Yeah, I think it's... It's big in life. You know, it's played a huge impact on my relationships, my body image and, you know, my weight. It really has. So particularly with my family, you know, like because I was probably I am the largest out of the four girls and six children. I'm definitely the largest. And
largest in terms of weight?
Yeah, size, and weight. Mm. Yeah, definitely. And that played a big impact on, I think they wanted me to kind of fit in a little bit better with them. so, you know, I've actually ended, you know, there was, you know, a relationship in my own family that I've had to end for the pure grace of trying to, you know, pull myself out of mm-hmm. feeling like this this kind of body image is going to be their number one objective, because every time I saw them, it was, you know, why do you look like that? Or why don't you do something about yourself? Or, you know, why don't you have, why don't you, you know, like you'll feel better if you do something. Just constant. It was all the time.
Another family trauma.
So, I think that's played a big impact. And thinking back, even when I was younger as a child as well.
But did it make you feel worse about yourself, or you just subtract yourself from
connection? Always felt like I was singled out, like I felt very isolated, like I didn't feel like I was with them. And ultimately I became the black sheep.
Yeah, bullying.
It is bullying. Yeah, it is bullying. And I found that I was very different from them, and that I was kind of definitely, I suddenly I stood out as the black sheep of the family because of my body. But did it make me a lesser person later in life? No, it didn't. In fact, I think now when I, you know, look at that kind of part of my life, I recognise now that I actually fought to rise above it. Mm-hmm. And I ultimately accepted the challenge, and it provided me with the resilience and determination and courage I have today. In a way, that bullying did the total reverse flip on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I would say that I've become more successful because of it. Yeah, definitely.
Because you were resisting that.
Yeah, I was resisting it. But as a child, you know, when just thinking back to that, as a child, you know, going through that process of being a bit chubbier and bigger as well, I actually took on, when you say how does it affect relationships, I actually took on, I had to be humorous. Mm. So I thought if I was funny, they wouldn't notice my weight. Yeah. So I became quite a joker.
Yeah.
You know, I was...
It's a very famous mask, to cover your insecurities. Like,
yes.
In psychology, there's different masks people put on, and Joker is one of them. Yeah.
I became the Joker. Like, everyone thought I was really funny, and I thought, oh, that's good. They can't see my weight. They can only see my humour. Yeah. When I think back to that, I just go, what the hell? But yeah, I was noticed.
Has it changed since then, or you're still?
I think the humor is still there. Well, actually, what I've recognized when I go to humor, or when I think of it is during intense stressful periods.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that, so working with high level executive, going through their profession and their lifestyle, and you know what they're doing in life, it was actually a skill that was very needed,
mm-hmm.
because I can diffuse a stressful situation very quickly and make light of something that suddenly doesn't appear so heavy. So I ended up using it again later in life, but who'd ever think that at that young age that it would have come in? And today I do see life as take it lighter, look at things a little lighter. Stop, you know, if people come with me with really heavy issues, I always think, Let's deconstruct this and just look at what it really is, because it's probably just one little thing there that's built up around all these other objects in your mind, you know? And I try to use humour to bring it out. And it kind of works in a way. I don't know how.
It's like you're talking about me, exactly the same approach I take when I'm in a stressful situation. And it's naturally, I didn't invent it that.
No.
It came naturally. And yep. I realized that I'm still learning to use it deliberately, not instinctively.
Yes.
Because instinctively, right. When I am in danger or in dangerous situation, I notice that I start being humorous. And I thought that's a great actually tool that to release the stress.
Yeah. Yeah, release the stress. That's the way I do it too. Yeah.
So I love it. So do you is that your way to overcome body related insecurities, or you have other ways, and has it changed with age?
Yeah, look, I now declare it. Mm-hmm. I declare it, and I put, like, putting a potential conflict of interest on the table. You know, I simply say, hey, I've got some insecurities when it comes to my body. We've had a journey, me and my body, and while I'm still learning to love my body, there's certain attachments associated to it that I've constructed major lifetime choices around. So, and that will be with me for the rest of my life. And honestly, most people get it when I kind of put it to them like that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the lifetime decisions have come in because, yeah, the back in the time, you know, when I said something about going back to 21 and saying, and the world as you've witnessed is so wondrous, don't settle. Well, obviously there's a component there that I felt I did settle. And that was probably due to the fact I didn't think I could really do much more with myself because I had a low opinion of myself in my, mm-hmm. my looks and my body and everything. I'm just now transitioning, you know, at 48 to start again. I am on a journey right now. Right now, you've caught me right on the spot. You've caught me right in the journey phase of looking at a whole new chapter in my life. So
it's so interesting that we are learning to love our bodies when our bodies start to deteriorate.
That's so true.
When we had our perfect bodies, we hated that and we thought that something wrong with that. And then only when we feel that it's getting older and more fragile, as you said, and in some kind of deteriorating, we just suddenly decide, no, I have to love whatever is left. So I think maybe it's the rule, we realize the value of that when we start losing something.
Yeah, look, I think there is that, definitely. And losing something and losing people in your life, like suddenly you start to have people around you that pass, or there's people that take on different journeys as well. And you think, wow, life's short, right? Mm. Life's short. And you need to take stock, because we all get on our, I think we all get on our pathways in life, and, you know, we enjoy it. We go on holidays, we meet people, we live to work or work to live, whichever one takes your fancy. You know, we do various things in life that do see our days our way.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably three significant times where suddenly in your journey there's a reset, or there's something that just happens, you know, whether it be love, loss, it could be health issues, you know, there's things that just make you hit the reset mm-hmm. button. But there's significantly, I for myself, I see probably three. Yeah, hitting the reset button. I've just hit my second one.
So you still have time.
Yeah, I know.
We still have time.
Yeah, we do. We do.
So my last question in this body related sector is, do you have ways of bringing yourself into body shape you want? And again, has it changed with age? Like, for example, you look at yourself in the mirror saying, okay, I need to, or you don't bother.
No, I think everyone has a solution for working on their body image that they want. The truth for me right now is all about love. If you work on loving yourself first, I know that's a quote that just continues to happen, but this is the situation I'm in terms of just learning to love myself mm-hmm. right now. And I think the preconceived body image that I'm looking for will probably come to fruition through that love. Mm. I think I'll learn to love myself more through that, you know, looking, seeing that image in my head of whatever that is will just come to fruition. That's what I believe.
So it's a psychological...
It's a psychological thing. Yeah.
Though probably when you were younger, you tried to do some physical exercise, dieting, or you never did that?
No, I did. It just, it never stuck with me, you know? I mean, how many times did people... I went on a diet all the bloody time, you know? And then I went, oh, I lost, 5 kilos. And, I remember the family, oh, you lost 5 kilos. And then, 3 weeks later, oh, it's back on again. I mean, I can't sustain something like that. It's just not who I am, you know? So it's more about finding that love in me to love and nurture me and just I will love my body. I know I will once I've found that I love myself again. I think I will love my body. So we'll see. I might have to come back and tell you whether it happens or not.
Yeah, it would be interesting. So my last question is if you have any favorite quote or saying about being a woman.
So my mission in life as a woman is not merely to survive, but to thrive and to do so with passion, compassion, humor, and some style. And that's from Maya Angelou.
Very nice. Thank you, Ursula. Thank you very much for such an interesting conversation.
Thank you.
And I hope you will enjoy the rest of your day with us and photo shoot.
I'm really looking forward to this. And thank you. Thank you for having something like this for women to come to experience. I really appreciate it. It's lovely.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.